I want to begin to thank the organizers for inviting me to speak on this topic. It was a long time ago that I actually worked on this in a Dutch the Dutch exegesis in this case. So I'm actually learning a lot for myself. And therefore, this paper that I hope to present is a very first draft. So the printout that you have maybe at some points actually can vary with what I am trying to say this morning. It is a very first draft. It also brought memories of the way I grew up. Like yesterday in the presentation of Dr. Gribben, he mentioned of the Dutch translation of John Owen's commentary to the Hebrews. And actually, I said, oh, I completely forgot that to mention that in my lecture. And it was kind of a confrontational for me because the way I grew up in a very, say, Dutch pietistic conventicles, Reformed conventicles. And my grandfather very often referred to John Owen, Epistle of the Hebrews. So thank you for Dr. Gribben for reminding me of my youth. Before I begin the lecture, I have three things to say. May I have the first slide, please? I will use the term nadere reformatie, which sometimes has been translated as the Dutch Second Reformation or the Dutch Third Reformation. I am trying to advocate that we stay with the term nadere reformatie because it is a very problematic term. Nadere can mean nearer, which some scholars interpreted the 17th century in which this movement, pietistic movement, took place within the Dutch Reformed Church, aimed for a returning to the ideals and ideas of the Protestant Reformation of the 16th century, so a near, a return, or a further, meaning an advancement, a working out. And both meanings are in the word naderen. The second problem is Reformation. Which Reformation do we talk about? Is it the Protestant 16th century Reformation in general in Western Europe? Or is it the 16th, early 17th century Reformation in the Dutch Republic, which is much more complex? We can talk about the Reformed tradition of the Reformation in the Netherlands, in the Dutch Republic, or the Lutheran aspect, or even the Anabaptist aspect, particularly in the northern, in so-called Friesland. Hollanders will never say Friesland belongs to the Dutch Republic. But so this is a very complex the term, nadere reformatie. So I stick to the nadere reformatie, so bear with me. The second comment that I want to make is about the names. I will mention a lot of names because of the vast number of people, in particular the 17th century, that dealt with biblical interpretation in the Dutch Republic, being it in an academic setting, or what I will call homiletical commentaries. There are so many names, and this is just a sample of the names. So I list them here for your benefit. You will see them in the paper. But when I lecture, I only will go by their surname to save some time. This slide refers to names of Dutch exegetes in the academic context. The next slide is those Dutch exegetes that worked and wrote commentaries in Latin or in Dutch on the Song of Songs, which will be my primary attention as an example of Renaissance and reception in Dutch biblical exegesis. And then the next slide, my focus is on Abram Hellenbroek, who wrote a massive commentary on Het Hooglied van Salomo, the Song of Songs, which one single sermon, one single chapter was translated into English. And so this is helpful when we talk about a reception, particularly in this case in the Middle Colonies and New England. And then two other important names as homiletical commentaries, Paulus Hulsius and Bernardus Smijtegeld, that I will mention. So that is the introduction comments. Now, I was thinking to contextualize it historically, culturally. I will put on a Dutch accent, but I think by now you will get it. So, a sermon of a Dutch divine on taking the little foxes. Canticles 2, verse 15. In 1743, Gilbert Tennent published in Boston, New England, a collection of sermons entitled The Necessity of Holding Fast the Truth, with an appendix related to the errors lately vented by some Moravians. The title page informed prospective readers that this volume included a sermon of a Dutch divine on taking the little foxes. The Dutch divine is Abram Hellebroek, a pastor and preacher, a representative of the Nadere Reformatie, a Hebraist and scripture commentator in the late 17th and early 18th centuries of the Dutch Republic. In fact, the sermon on taking the little foxes was translated and published in English a year earlier, taken from Hellebroek's extensive commentary in Dutch on the Canticle of Canticles. The inclusion of this sermon as Tennent's antidote to the arrival of the Moravian brethren in these American regions has been appraised as remarkable. The transatlantic reception of Hellebroek's sermon, furthermore, was not restricted to the middle colonists. Jonathan Edwards of New England Colony referred to the same sermon in Images of Divine Things in circa 1742. He also cross-referenced Hellebroek's work in his Blank Bible on Canticles 2:15 and Judges 15, the verses 4 and 5. The reception of this little work by the Dutch divine in the revival context of the 1740s of the Middle Colony and New England colonies differs remarkably from the first decade of the 18th century in the Dutch Republic in which Hellebroek's commentary was published. Furthermore, the apologetic character of Tennent's publication contrasts the exegetical nature of the biblical commentary on the Canticles by Hellebroek, which is considered the apex of Canticles interpretation in the Nadere Reformatie. In fact, Hellebroek's work offers a window into the Renaissance and the reception of early modern Dutch biblical exegesis, since, as far as I see it, the center of a Reformed biblical interpretation had shifted in the late 16th century from the centers of Swiss Protestant Reformations to the Dutch Republic. The hermeneutical principles and historical, grammatical, analytical exegesis of scripture linked to doctrine and practice, as demonstrated in the commentaries of Bullinger, Zurich, Calvin, Geneva, Vermigli, Zurich, Musculus in Bern, were now articulated and advanced in the lowlands. Students of the Genevan and other academies took up positions in the newly founded universities of the Dutch Republic in Leiden, Dordrecht, Franeker, Groningen, Amsterdam and Utrecht. Indeed, early modern exegesis in the Dutch Republic was part of the great era of Protestant linguistic studies, whether in biblical or in cognate languages of the post-Reformation era. The exegetical theological enterprise consisted in a movement from explicatio to applicatio of the text of scripture, and the loci of theological system arose directly out of the meditation of specific text. 17th century exegetical works were by and large aimed at the theological and practical ends and resonated more with the medieval and patristic exegesis, as we heard earlier in this conference, than with the modern higher critical interpretation of scripture. And as such, the hermeneutical, philological, and text critical work of the early modern period does not reflect the so-called proof text characterization, that is, biblical exegesis serving only to confirm established doctrine, so commonly made. Furthermore, the work of the Reformed exegetes of the early modern era can be characterized as an intensification of scholarly biblical exegesis and an outgrow of the Renaissance ideals following the Protestant Reformation. Moreover, many post-Reformation exegetes, such as Ainsworth, Coxeus, Drusius, Lightwood, and Paul, showed intimate knowledge of the 16th century Renaissance scholars of the biblical Hebrew, such as Fagius, Buxdorf, and demonstrated a profound acquaintance with the rabbinic exegetical tradition, including the Targum and Midrash. In addition, these early modern exegetical works digested not only the writings of the medieval Hebraist, Nicholas of Lyra, but also included commentators such as Ibn Ezra, Rassi, and Kimchi. And these were Jewish exegetes with a primary interest in the literal meaning of the biblical text. Finally, and last but not least, Bernard of Clairvaux's sermons on the Canticles were indispensable for the practical and pietistic-oriented exegetes and theologians. Indeed, the post-Reformation Reformed interpretation of the Song of Songs culminated in the Dutch Republic between 1600 and 1750 and included works on the Song of Songs by Theodorus and Wilhelmus Abrakel, Coxeus, Groenewegen, Lampe, Lodenstein, Koelman, Amark, Doutrein, Teling, Van Til, and that is Salomon van Til, not the other Dutch one that taught in Philadelphia. Udemans, Vitinga, Voetjes, and Witsjes. As such, Hellenbroek's commentary was written in a context of a long-standing and burgeoning biblical interpretation of the Canticles in the Dutch Republic. The early modern era of exegesis in the Dutch Republic from circa 1600 to 1750 then can be distinguished as a part of a broader post-Reformation period and a more specific Dutch movement within the Reformed Church with a strong emphasis on piety, the so-called Nadere Reformatie. The latter gave rise to commentaries arising out from sermons, while the former produced exegetical works in an academic context. In addition to these two contributions of biblical interpretation, the Dutch Bible with annotations, the Statenvertaling with aantekening of 1637, as well translated commentaries into the Dutch language, shaped the Renaissance of biblical exegesis in the Dutch Republic. And therefore, please can I have the next slide? And therefore, in what follows, I offer first a broad outline of post-Reformation Reformed exegesis in the Dutch Republic of the 17th and early 18th centuries. Follows, second, brief observations on the Dutch Bible with annotations. Three, commentaries arising from sermons. Four translated works of biblical commentary, all with attention to the Song of Songs, chapter 2, verse 15. Those foxes, those little foxes, who are they? Subsequently, Hellenbroek's sermon will be placed in its historical and exegetical context, and we will revisit its transatlantic reception together with some concluding remarks. The Reformed theologians of the Academy in the early modern era in the Dutch Republic were first and foremost biblical exegetes. Doctrina and practica arose primarily from the examination of and meditation on Scripture and was formulated with the words of Scripture. Notwithstanding a discerning use of medieval scholasticism in the service of defining doctrines precisely, and a discriminating use of medieval Bernardine piety. Furthermore, biblical commentary arose in the academic context of the Disputationes, where students of theology were instructed on matters of exegesis with critical reflection on scripture. In other words, the scripture commentaries of the early modern era were an integral part of and foundation to the theological enterprise. And as such, it was not uncommon for theologians to spend years teaching and writing biblical commentary before publishing a systematic theology. The Leiden professors, Coxeus and Amark, for example, taught and published on the Old and New Testament exegesis for over 20 years before publishing their magnum opus of theology, the Summa Doctrina de Vreudere and the Christiana Theologica Medulla, respectively. And by the way, the Merrow of Christian Theology of Amark, that replaced William Ames' Merrow of Sacred Divinity at Yale College and Harvard College in the early 18th century, was published at the end of his life, after he wrote 26 volumes of biblical commentary. So when he cites a biblical text in his systematic theology, there's this whole exegetical world and reflection behind, and not just throwing Bible texts for a doctor, yeah? Sprinkle. The biblical exegetical approach to theology, this biblical exegetical approach to theology ranged from the period of the early orthodoxy through the high orthodoxy period to the first part of the late orthodoxy, the era from circa 1565 to circa 1725. After that period, a stricter division between the disciplines of biblical studies and dogmatic theology occurred. Representatives then of the early modern biblical exegetes of the Dutch Republic who work in a university context include Van Alphen, Alting, Brown, Boerman, Drusius, Gomarus, Van der Hoonde, Hulsius, Junius, Leusden, Revius, Rivet, Roel, Schotanus, Schultens, Vrietinga, Sirien, Valleus en Witsius. But a review of their works showed that the University of Leiden was the premier academy of the Republic for biblical exegesis, commencing with Junius in the early Orthodox period, finding its summit in the high Orthodoxy period. Moreover, a strong attention to the exegesis of the Hebrew scripture in Dutch Israel — Israel was called in the 17th century, or the Dutch Republic was sometimes called the Israel of the West — was not at the expense of new commentaries, however, including the Book of Revelation, a biblical book on which Calvin refrained from commenting. In regard to the reception of these commentaries, two observations can be made. Many were translated from Latin into Dutch, German, and English. They were preserved in both private and public libraries, among them the college libraries of the 18th century New England and Middle Colonies. Noteworthy, and here you have the variations of manuscripts, noteworthy are the two hermeneutical and exegetical developments in the early Dutch Republic in biblical exegesis. In the first decade of the 17th century, it was Arminius' interpretation of Romans 9 that led eventually to the Remonstrant and Contra-Remonstrant controversy. And Remonstrant exegetes include, besides Arminius, Hugo Grotius and Simon Episcopius. In the second half, and here I continue, I think, on the manuscript that you have in front of you, in the second half of the 17th century in the Dutch Republic, is a difference in approach to the Reformed understanding of scripture between Coxeus and Voetius. The fundamental difference is that Coxeus understood the scripture as a revelation of the history of redemption and not primarily as a book of reformed doctrine and practices. History for Coxeus is redemptive history or covenant history, which is progressive in nature. The covenant of works is abrogated and the covenant of grace culminate in the coming of God's kingdom. Hence, for Coxeus, prophecy is of utmost importance. And thus the words of Scripture must be understood in the light of prophecy and redemptive history. As such, the Old Testament is foundational for the New Testament, so that the latter can be only understood through the former. And the agreement between the two testaments is the centrality of Christ for Coxeus. This hermeneutical key led to two implications. On the one hand, a positive assessment of the Old Testament, as all the prophecies that are contained in it are sufficient for salvation. And on the other hand, a negative appraisal of the Old Testament, as for Coxeus under the Old Covenant, God would not yet have given a complete forgiveness, paresis, than under the New Covenant, through Christ's sacrifice and suretyship, the aphesis, due to the progressive nature of redemptive history. And the distinction between redemptive history before and after Christ also implied for Coxeus the exegetical importance of typology, which he strongly distinguished from allegory. A further implication for Coxeus is that exegesis becomes intensely Christological. Christ is the key for the understanding of the entire Scripture. And the need for understanding of the meaning of the words of Scripture, philology therefore, is indispensable, as well the literary genre of each book of the Bible, as only then, according to Coxeus, can doctrine arise from exegesis and not from an a priori confessional interpretation of Scripture. Furthermore, the formulation of doctrine with the words of Scripture must lead for Coxeus to practice and piety, his famous phrase, the doctrina secundum pietatum. By implication, because of the advancing character of redemptive history, the perfect knowledge of doctrine and practice of the Scripture occurs in the eschaton. This hermeneutical understanding of Scripture with its attention to prophecy, typology, and redemptive covenant history are distinct features of Coxeus and Coxean exegesis. Although some Voetian commentators distance themselves from the Coxean approach to exegesis, others of the school of Voetius, such as Peters van Maastricht, Doutrein, and Witsius, among others, combined both hermeneutical and exegetical approaches, offering attention to both the historical and personal character of the work of redemption. The centrality of the Christological exegetical focus, though with less attention to typology, but a rejection of the paresis-aphesis distinction. Thus, the early modern Reformed exegesis in the Dutch Republic was a dominant presence in the post-Reformation era, whereas the interpretive framework of Coxeus can be characterized as a new development in hermeneutics and exegesis. With this fairly broad background, let us consider biblical exegesis in the academic context with particular attention to the Song of Songs, chapter 2, verse 15. The early modern Dutch exegete, Udemans, in a brief and clear exposition of Salomon's Song of Songs, which was also published in German, remarks about his surprise and grief that this biblical book is so little known in the Dutch Republic, and in particular among the Reformed. The reason being that it is not considered by many to be beneficial to explain this book to the church. On the contrary, Udemans argues, this book, a parable of the bridegroom and his bride, concerns Christ and his church, and is full of instruction and comfort, whereby he consults the commentaries of Origen, Apollonius, Gregory of Nyssa, Theodoret, Cassiodorus, and Gregory the Great. In addition, Udemans referred to the use of the works of Richard of St. Victor and Bernard of Clairvaux. In sum, Udeman Eudemans resort to the patristic and medieval traditions of biblical exegesis. In the Christian tradition, it is the early church father, according to Eudemans, Hippolytus of Rome, who understand the foxes as heretics and false prophets, to which the later patristic writer Apponius adds, foxes are persons, as Christ calls Herod the king a fox. The church must watch for the perversi doctores, the false teachers. The medieval exegetical tradition on the Canticles, moreover, finds its high point in Bernard's 86 sermons commentary on this book. In fact, Bernard dedicates 4 sermons on chapter 2, verse 15, and notes that a devout person may tend the spiritual vineyard well, that is, by taking care of the conscience and soul. However, flatterers and detractors are the 2 kinds of foxes which may lead into temptation. And such foxes tend to tempt people inwardly, whereas outwardly, heretics are the foxes of the church. And for the abbot of Clairvaux, it is the secret heretics who are the greater challenge and thus to be more severely criticized. And he cites here specifically the Toulousans, that is the Cathar dualist or Gnostic revival movement in the 12th century, who preferred doctrine and Christian piety and practice with their errors with respect to marriage, infant baptism, purgatory, prayers for the dead, and invocation of the saints. But central to the literal but primarily allegorical interpretation in Bernard's sermons is the so-called Braut mystique, the spiritual or the mystical union and communion between Christ, the bridegroom and his bride, which is both the church as well the individual member. Eudemans explains furthermore that the church derives comfort from knowing that all the tyranny and persecution will cease one day. Nevertheless, in the meantime, it has to deal with false teaching, the foxes in the vineyard of the Lord, that is the church. Thus, although Eudemans consulted earlier works, which sometimes identified foxes with specific persons or movement, he understands them in a more general sense as false teachings. And this exegetical insight is later echoed in the era of the High Orthodoxy by, for example, Coxeus. Coxeus offers a Latin translation of the Hebrew text of Canticles and formulates his exposition on 2:15 by linking the word of this text to other parts of Scripture, such as Romans 16, Revelation 2, Acts 20, Philippians 3. And he infers accordingly that foxes are the grievous wolf, dogs, evil workers, those who cause division, those who say they are apostates and are not, from such ones should keep away. Collectively, the biblical exegete and theologian of Leiden University notes that the foxes are errors in doctrine, a preparation of the coming of the Antichrist. This exposition then is strongly formulated with the words of Scripture without identifying specific heretics or heresies. This interpretation of Eudemans and Coxeus, moreover, resonates affirmingly with the wider context of the post-Reformation Reformed era, including such biblical exegetes as Ainsworth, David Pareus, Piscator, Matthew Paul, and John Trapp. And frequently, these exegetes also consult other works, such as those mentioned by Eudemans, and include Bernard for practical reflections on the text of Scripture. The Statenbijbel. The Dutch Bible with annotations is the Dutch authorized version of Scripture. A scholarly work that was a new translation of the canonical books of the Old and New Testament and the Apocrypha from the original Hebrew and Aramaic of the Masoretic text and the Greek Textus Receptus. commissioned by the government of the Republic, the Staten, upon the recommendation of the Synod of Dort, 1619, 18, and 19, a synod which is more often associated with the Remonstrant and Contra-Remonstrant controversy than with Bible translation and biblical exegesis. Moreover, and relevant for early modern biblical exegesis, the synod established guidelines for the translation of the biblical text, since they understood translation to be a type of interpretation. And four concise guidelines include, first, always a careful adherence to the original text, and that the manner of writing of the original languages be preserved as much as the clarity and properties of Dutch speech permit. But in cases where Hebrew or Greek manner of speech was harder than could remain in the text, that they note this in the margin. Two, add as few words as possible to complete the meaning of a sentence if it is not expressed fully, and that these words be distinguished from the text with a different font and place between brackets. Three, formulate a short and clear summary for each book and chapter and write this in the margin at the respective location in the Holy Scripture. And four, add a brief explanation providing insight to the translation of unclear passages. But the addition of doctrinal points is neither necessary nor advisable. Thus, the adherence to the words and meaning of the biblical text in the original languages, adding few and identifiable words when required, as well offering a succinct summary, and adding annotations in cases of unclear passages, the exclusion of doctrinal notes highlights the exegetical focus of the translation. The importance of the translation and annotation of scripture in Dutch is noted furthermore, as this issue was discussed in the first week of the synod, prior to the deliberations of the five articles of the Remonstrants. The translators and annotators of the Hebrew scriptures, Johannes Bogerman and Baudatius, studied at the universities of Franeker and Heidelberg, complemented their studies in Geneva and Canterbury respectively, and both worked for 3 years on the translation and annotation of the Old Testament, including the Song of Songs. The form and function of these annotations stand in a long trajectory, reaching back to the medieval Glossa Ordinario, and include commentary derived from the Church Fathers. The exegetical reflection on 2:15 of the Staten Bible notes, "The foxes spoil the vineyard by eating the grapes," that is, the false teachers, heretics, and deceitful rulers of the true religion and Church of God. Three observations can be made on this annotation. First, there is an immediate exegetical continuity with an earlier version of the Bible in Dutch, the Deuzer Bible of 1581, which says, "Heretics are the true foxes which spoil the vineyard of the Lord." Secondly, we find an interpretive continuity of Jewish, patristic, and medieval Christian exegetes who identified foxes with specific persons, nations, and schismatic groups, though these heretics may have differed among themselves in their views. The Midrash identified the Egyptians as foxes, while they are the Amalekites for the Targum, or as mentioned before, the Toulousans for Bernard. Thirdly, the annotation by the Statenvertalers, the Dutch translations, add foxes as deceitful rulers of the true religion, which on the one hand can be traced back to Bernard's identification of them with a fraudulent government. And this thought, however, is absent in the Jewish, patristic, and other medieval commentaries, and neither is it found in Udeman's or Coxey's exposition of this verse. And here I wondered, and I'm doing still some more research, the synod makes the recommendation in 1690 to the government, get us a new translation. I mean, fund the translation, pay for it. takes 20 years to get the funding in place. And the funding was for the translation and for the publication, for the wide distribution. So it takes 20 years to negotiate with the government, get the funding in place. And more the government asks, well, if we pay, we want to see this and this in the translation. They say, no, 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 no. We do the translation, you just pay. So I am always wonder when I see this, the deceitful rulers of the true religion that the government was creeping in. I don't know. The start the Bible with its annotation profoundly and persistently shaped the Dutch language as well, as the Dutch biblical exegesis for centuries, even to this very day. Furthermore, the fame of the annotations was not restricted to the Dutch Republic. In 1645, such Westminster assembly divines such as Twisse, Cornelius Burgers, Stephen Marshall, Anthony Tuckney, and Samuel Rutherford strongly advocated for the translation of the annotations, calling them a treasure of knowledge and spiritual understanding. And it befell to Theodor Haack, a German Reformed scholar and a resident in England, to translate not only the annotation, but the entire scriptural text of the Staten Bijbel from Dutch into English. The translated annotation, however, were not placed in the margin, as in the Dutch edition, but between the text of scripture as a running commentary. Although Haack is perhaps most known for the first German translation of John Milton's Paradise Lost, his Dutch annotations upon the whole Bible, 1657, became widely known in England, Scotland, as well the Middle Colonies and England, New England. This interpretive work of scripture with its exegetical insights contributed to the international recognition of early modern Dutch biblical exegesis. 3. Homiletical commentaries in Dutch. The first years of the late Orthodoxy era marked by a transition in biblical exegesis from the Latin to the Dutch language. In contrast to the theological and often technical commentaries of the Dutch Protestant scholastics in Latin, the homiletical commentaries in Dutch not only arose out of sermonic material, but were also more practical and applicatory. A rise of publications of this genre of biblical exegesis is noticeable in the second part of the 17th century and the early part of the 18th century in the Dutch Republic. They include works on the Book of Esther, on a single or multiple or all the chapters of the Book of Psalms, on various prophetic books. In addition, homiletical commentaries on the New Testament include on the Matthean parables, the Acts of the Apostles, among the Pauline epistles, works on Romans, Galatians, Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians, and the Epistle to the Hebrews, which was commonly accepted in the 17th century as having been written by St. Paul. There were also homiletical commentaries on the Epistle of Peter and John and the Apocalypse as well. Some of the applications of the biblical text were lengthy, as attested by the 105 sermons on the Epistle to the Hebrews by Paulus Hulsius and the 145 sermons on Matthew 12, verse 20 and 21 by Martijn Bernardus Smijtegeld. So if you want to do a sermon series, don't tell your homiletic professor. The wide reception of these works, attested by the reprints, and for your information, the sermons of Bernardus Smijtegeld are still reprinted as of today in the Netherlands, was not limited to the Dutch Republic, as some of these commentaries were translated into German. Furthermore, one should not overlook homilies as biblical exegetical commentary. The astounding number of sermons published between circa 1650 to 1750 seemed to indicate an unrelenting craving for biblical exposition and application among the lowlanders. indispensable for these sermons and homiletical commentaries were the exegetical grammars, lexicons, and other aids of which the famous and massive concordance in three volumes in folio totaling 1,161 pages of Abram Trommius was the apex in the Dutch language. And this work is still printed in the Netherlands in Dutch, Trommius. Trommius is, I think, in every household of a Reformed church member. If you want to find something, your grandfather will tell you, look in Trommius. Trommius is just a household word. I was always thinking he is one of us. I don't know which congregation, till I realized that it was the 17th century. So. 4. Biblical commentaries in Dutch. The 18th century, furthermore, was marked by publication of three major commentaries of the entire Bible in Dutch. First, the commentary on the entire Bible by some of the principal English divines, edited by the Leiden professor van den Hoendert. This 17-volume commentary, published between 1739 and 1757, is derived from the works of the English exegete Patrick, Polis, and Wells. And at the same time, a literal and practical commentary on the whole Bible came to the Dutch market, an ecumenical work of 56 volumes edited and compiled from translations of the commentaries of Matthew Henry, as well as exegetical material of the Lutheran commentator Stark, the Anglican exegete Stackhouse, and the Roman Catholic expositor Calmet, with added annotations by the Dutch editors. Last but not least, the mathematician, philosopher, pastor, professor Jacob van Huys Klinkenberg published a 23-volume brief explanation with clarified annotation of the entire Bible. In sum, in addition to biblical commentary in the academic context and the Dutch Bible with annotations, the homiletical commentaries are all parts of the early modern Dutch exegetical era. The question then arises, where is Helen Brook in all of this? Now, just for your information, for those that are interested in the Dutch language, to translate Helen Brook, it's the pens of hell. Your pens of hell. And my grandfather was saying, look at Helen Brook. I was always, oh. Now, Helen Brook is most widely known in the Reformed world through a specimen of divine truth for the instruction of youth who prepare themselves for the confession of their faith. Still printed today, still available even in English, was widely known in the Reformed Church of America to far into the 20th century. This catechetical work explains the six loci of Reformed theology in question and answer format and shows continuity in form and content between the catechetical instruction and systematic theology of the Protestant scholastic Reformed Orthodoxy. Besides the aforementioned commentary of the Song of Songs, Hellebroek produced a massive commentary on Isaiah. The rumor always has it when he published his commentary that he was in pastor in Rotterdam. Then he published his commentaries that the rabbis of Rotterdam visited him for more explanation and instruction. Exegetical works on the book of Jeremiah, on the Messiah, and the harmony of the Old and the New Testament. For those that are interested in Jonathan Edwards, it resonates. Notwithstanding all these work, Helen Brook's renowned as a biblical commentary and Hebraist is often overlooked. In fact, research on biblical interpretation of the nadere Reformatie awaits a much needed appraisal. Though Richard Müller asserts one line on Helen Brook, Helen Brook's work is notable for its combination of philological, theological, and devotional interest. As such, the three contributions of early modern biblical exegesis in the Dutch Republic, namely commentary arising in an academic context, the annotations of the Dutch Bible, commentary arising from sermons, come together in Helen Brook's exegetical works. His writing shows that he was able to draw off both Protestant scholasticism and the nadere Reformatie, the Coxean and the Voetian exegetical traditions, as well the Jewish or rabbinic and Christian medieval interpretations. The title of his commentary of the Song of Songs reveals the nature of his work, the Canticles of Solomon explained and spiritualized. The work was approved by Hellebroek's former professors and canticle commentaries at Leiden University, Amark and van den Hohner, and the commentary consisted of chapters of verse-by-verse explanation of the biblical text. Most of the chapters are reminiscent of the threefold sermon structure, exegesis, doctrine, and application. And in approaching the interpretation of the Song of Songs, Hellebroek, noting the Haggadic Midrash and on the Song of Songs and referring to Maimonides, asserts that Jewish commentators understood the Canticles as the Holy of Holiness, holies among the Book of Scriptures. And furthermore, Hellebroek reminds his readers of the advice in Origen and Hieronymus, prohibiting the reading of the Canticles by persons under the age of 30. I'm not asking that you leave the room when you are in the tomb. Exegetical, this biblical book, according to Hellebroek, is neither historical nor prophetical, but spiritual or mystical. He adds, I know well that this choice is not the taste of many in our time. That is not to say that Hellebroek was unaware of the significant debate concerning the prophetic character of the book. But he asserts, I refrain myself concerning these notorious differences. Furthermore, the belief that the song has its possible origin in Solomon's marriage to an Egyptian prince was known to Hellebroek, but he remained undecided on the issue. The pastor of Rotterdam asserts, I have focused on the literal and spiritual interpretation of this song, an echo of the patristic and medieval interpretive framework. In addition, Hellebroek goes on to say in the preface that cards full of commentaries have addressed the literal interpretation, but few have attended to the spiritual and secret or hidden sense of the Song of Songs, except the ancients. And he refers there to the patristic and medieval commentators. Finally, Hellebroek gives the text of scripture in the original Hebrew, together with the Greek Septuagint, and offers his exegetical and philological annotations in Latin, so that the commentary is able to be used by the academics as well. Thus, each chapter opens with the Hebrew text, along with the translation in Greek and a summary of the Dutch Statenvertaling, which is omitted in the English translation of 1742. And he inquires, chapter 2, verse 15, who the speaker is. Is the bride asking the bridegroom to take the foxes? In consultation with others, and he resorts to medieval and patristic commentaries, Hellebroek suggests that it is the bridegroom who is speaking to the church, his vineyard, and commands the church to take the foxes. In his philological analysis on the Hebrew word foxes, Hellebroek refers to the work of Samuel Bosjar and Edward Lay, Critica Sacra, works omitted in the English translation of Hellebroek's sermon, but known to Edwards and others of New England and Middle Colonies. In fact, Edwards follows explicitly Hellebroek in a more general interpretation that the foxes represent heretics and heretical doctrines. Furthermore, like Oxeus, Hellebroek constructs from a wide array of biblical texts the possible meaning of the word foxes. And note that these were understood by some rabbinic commentators as the Egyptians, or Amalekite, or by some patristic authors as heretics. Following the annotation of the Statenbijbel Bible, that the foxes are false teachers, heretics, and deceitful rulers of the religion, the government, and of the Church of God, the clergy. He does not identify them either with the Moravians or any person or movement, as is suggested by Tennant. Hellebroek is more concerned with the damage the foxes can bring to the vineyard, the church. This includes spoiling of the truth, spoiling of piety, worship, unity, and spiritual growth. In particular, the little foxes. are not easily seen and discovered, and have every time been easier access, and for that reason are more dangerous in doing mischief. This seems, however, accord with what Tennet had also in mind when he asserted that the honorable Count Sinsendorf and the brethren who have attended him thither, if they are covertly or openly bring in dangerous heresies, subverting the souls of our people, they must not wonder if we freely withstand them to their face. Conclusion. In conclusion, Hellebuyck's commentary of the Song of Songs stands in a long-standing tradition and trajectory of biblical exegesis. In fact, this commentary comes at the close of Protestant scholasticism in the Dutch Republic, a time of an altering Reformed orthodoxy and piety, though with a regular call for revival. It was a moment of transition in the language from Latin to Dutch, a moment of transition for Hellebuyck in biblical interpretation as well. The congregation of Rotterdam had voiced objections when he was called as pastor and preacher in the harbor city of the Dutch Republic, being known as an Coxean. As such, his biblical commentary showed his philological attention to detail, as advocated by Coxeus, promoting a precise understanding of the words of Scripture, even as his application of Scripture to the Christian life and Christian piety and spirituality resonated strongly with the Voetian Nadere Reformatie. However, Hellebuyck's deep acquaintance with the rabbinic, patristic and medieval interpretive traditions on the Canticles was shared by both Coxean and Voetian biblical exegetes. Although the foxes in the Song of Song 2:15 generally were understood as pointing to heretics or heretical divisions from orthodoxy in the Christian tradition, time and again they were identified with specific persons or movement. Since text gets meaning in context, Hellebuyck's work offered a window into the early modern biblical commentary of the Dutch Republic, though its reception in the New World was framed differently. The commentary was written in a time of declining Reformed orthodoxy longing for revival. While the reception of the translated sermon of the Dutch divine on taking the little foxes was during the awakenings. Furthermore, the exegetical commentary is located in the context of the Dutch post-Reformation Reformed and Nadere Reformatie area, philological, theological and devotional in essence, shaping Christian piety and practice. The translation and reception of a single chapter of that commentary in the New World shows a new context, an homiletically doctrinal defense relating to the errors vented by some Moravians. In this regard, however, one can speak of interpretive continuity, as seen in Gilbert Stenner's identification of Moravian brethren in these American regions as foxes, even though this specific assessment is absent in Hellebuyck's work. But the inclusion of Hellebuyck's sermon by Tennet nevertheless as a means of apologetic in the necessity of holding fast the truth falls outside of and is in discontinuity with the scope, aim and genre of Hellebuyck's commentary on the Canticles. Thank you.